In the morning, the steady shriek of the wind had lowered to a drone. Tim's bladder was full. He pushed back the sheet, crawled out onto ground that had been swept clean all the way to the bone of underlying rock, and hurried around the Dogon with his breath emerging from his mouth in bursts of white vapor that were immediately yanked away by the wind. The other side of the Dogon was in the lee of that wind, but it was cold, cold. His urine steamed, and by the time he finished, the puddle on the ground was starting to freeze. He hurried back, fighting the wind for every step and shivering all over. By the time he crawled back beneath the magic sheet and into the blessed warmth, his teeth were chattering. He wrapped his arms around the tiger's heavily muscled body without even thinking, and had only a moment's fright when its eyes and mouth opened. A tongue that looked as long as a rug runner and as pink as a new earth rose emerged. It licked the side of his face, and Tim shivered again, not from fright, but from memory. His father rubbing his cheek against Tim's early in the morning, before Big Ross filled the basin and scraped his face smooth. He said he would never grow a beard like his partner, said it wouldn't suit him. The tiger lowered its head and began to sniff at the collar of his shirt. Tim laughed as its whiskers tickled his neck. Then he remembered the last two popkins. "I'll share," he said, "although we know thee could have both if thee wanted." He gave one of the popkins to the tiger. It disappeared at once, but the beast only watched as Tim went to work on the other one. He ate it as fast as he could, just in case Cy Tiger changed its mind. Then he pulled the sheet over his head and drowsed off again. When he woke the second time, he guessed it might be noon. The wind had dropped still more, and when he poked his head out, the air was a trifle warmer. Still, he guessed the false summer the Widow Smack had been so right to distrust was now gone for good, as was the last of his food. "What did thee eat in there?" Tim asked the tiger. This question led naturally to another. "And how long was thee caged?" The tiger rose to its feet, walked a little distance toward the cage, and then stretched, first one rear leg and then the other. It walked farther toward the edge of the great canyon where it did its own necessary. When it had finished, it sniffed the bars of its prison, then turned from the cage as though it were of no interest and came back to where Tim lay propped on his elbows, watching. It regarded him somberly, so it seemed to Tim, with its green eyes, then lowered its head and nosed back the magic sheet that had sheltered them from the stark blast. The metal box lay beneath. Tim couldn't remember picking it up, but he must have. If it had been left where it was, it would have blown away. That made him think of the feather. It was still safely tucked in his belt. He took it out and examined it closely, running his fingers over its rich thickness. It might have been a hawk feather. If that was, it had been half the size. Or if he had ever seen a white hawk, which he had not. "This came from an eagle, didn't it?" Tim asked. "Gan's blood! Did." The tiger seemed uninterested in the feather, although it had been eager enough to snatch it from the breath of the rising storm last evening. The long, yellow-fuzzed snout lowered and pushed the box at Tim's hip. Then it looked at him. Tim opened the box. The only thing left inside was the brown bottle, which looked like the sort that might contain medicine. Tim picked it up and immediately felt a tingle in his fingertips, very like the one he'd felt in the Covenant Man's magic wand when he passed it back and forth over the tin bucket. "Shall I open it? For it's certain thee can't." The tiger sat, its green eyes fixed unwaveringly on the tiny bottle. Those eyes seemed to glow from within, as if its very brain burned with magic. Carefully, Tim unscrewed the top. When he took it off, he saw a small, transparent dropper fixed beneath. The tiger opened its mouth. The meaning was clear enough, but... "How much?" Tim asked. "I'd not poison thee for the world." The tiger only sat with its head slightly up-tilted and its mouth open, looking like a baby bird waiting to receive a worm. After a little experimentation, he'd never used a dropper before, although he'd seen a larger, cruder version that Destry called a bull squirter. Tim got some of the fluid into the little tube. It sucked up almost all the liquid in the bottle, for there was only a bit. He held it over the tiger's mouth, heart beating hard. He thought he knew what was going to happen, for he had heard many legends of skin men, but it was impossible to be sure the tiger was an enchanted human. "I'll put it in, drop by drop," he told the tiger. "If you want me to stop before it's gone, close thy mouth. Give me a sign if you understand." But as before, the tiger gave no sign. It only sat, waiting. One drop, two, three, the little tube half empty now, four, five. Suddenly the tiger's skin began to ripple and bulge, as if creatures were trapped beneath and struggling to get out. The snout melted away to reveal its cage of teeth, then re-knit itself so completely that its mouth was completely sealed over. Then it gave a muffled roar of either pain or outrage, seeming to shake the clearing. Tim scooted away on his bottom, terrified. The green eyes began to bulge in and out, as if on springs. The lashing tail was yanked inward, reappeared, was yanked inward again. The tiger staggered away, this time toward the precipice at the edge of the great canyon. "Stop!" Tim screamed. "Thee'll fall over!" The tiger lurched drunkenly along the edge, one paw actually going over and dislodging a spall of pebbles. It walked behind the cage that had held it, the stripes first blurring, then fading. Its head was changing shape. White emerged, and then, above it, a brilliant yellow where its snout had been. Tim could hear a grinding sound as the very bones inside its body rearranged themselves. On the far side of the cage, the tiger roared again, but halfway through, the roar became a very human cry. The blurring, changing creature reared up on its back legs, and where there had been paws, Tim now saw a pair of ancient black boots. The claws became silver sigils, moons, crosses, spirals. The yellow top of the tiger's head continued to grow until it became the conical hat Tim had seen in the tin pail. The white below it, where the tiger's bib had been, turned into a beard that sparkled in the cold and windy sunshine. It sparkled because it was full of rubies, emeralds, sapphires, and diamonds. The tiger was gone, and Merlin of the Eld stood revealed before the wondering boy. He was not smiling, as he had been in Tim's vision of him, but of course that had never been his vision at all. It had been the Covenant Man's glamour, meant to lead him on to destruction. The real Merlin looked at Tim with kindness, but also with gravity. The wind blew his robe of white silk around a body so thin it could have been little more than a skeleton. Tim got on one knee, bowed his head, and raised a trembling fist to his brow. He tried to say, "Heil, Merlin," but his voice had deserted him, and he could manage nothing but a dusty croak. "Rise, Tim, son of Jack," the mage said, "but before you do, put the cap on the bottle. There's a few drops left, I wot, and you'll want them." Tim raised his head and looked questioningly at the tall figure standing beside the cage that had held him. "For thy mother," said Merlin, "for thy mother's eyes."
"Say true," Tim whispered.
"True as the turtle that holds up the world. You've come a goodly way. You've shown great bravery and not a little foolishness, but we'll pass that, since they often go together, especially in the young. And you've freed me from a shape I've been caught in for many and many a. For that you must be rewarded. Now cap the bottle and get on your feet."
"Thank ye," Tim said. His hands were trembling and his eyes were blurred with tears, but he managed to get the cap on the bottle without spilling what was left.
"I thought you were a guardian of the beam, so I did. But Daria told me different."
"And who is Daria?"
"A prisoner, like you, locked in a little machine the people of the Fagonard gave me. I think she's dead."
"Sorry for your loss, son."
"She was my friend," Tim said.
Merlin nodded. "It's a sad world, Tim Ross. As for me, since this is the beam of the lion, 'twas his little joke to put me in the shape of a great cat, although not in the shape of Aslan, for that's magic not even he can do, although he'd like to, aye. Or slay Aslan and all the other guardians so the beams collapse."
"The Covenant Man," Tim whispered.